This episode of Linoleum Knife is brought to you by Film Movement Plus.
It is.
I'm going to tell you something, a secret.
Oh.
It's not a secret. It's no secret. Anybody who's listened long enough, I hate going to film festivals. Like, I just don't like doing it, right? They're full of crowded. It's crowded, and it's, you have to, here's the other thing. You go there, and you're a film critic, and you have to write immediately. You have to see a movie, turn it around real fast. You have to do this sometimes 3-4 times a day.
Yes.
I'm incapable.
I was going to say, have you ever?
I can. I know that I can't. I know that I can't sit. I cannot watch a movie and crank out something smart. I can barely crank out something smart if I write it 2 days later and I've had time to think about it. I certainly can't do it 3 minutes after I finish watching the movie. And then have you have to turn around and do it again? No. Yeah, you are good at it. I am not. I don't like going to film festivals, but that's not the point. The point is this. I'm a sucker for anything that's got the can imprint on it.
Ah, the laurels.
I am such an easy mark, right? If it was at Cannes, I think, well, somebody put it there. And they had to be smart to do that. Like, I've still got this, like, kid idea of how film festivals are programmed when I know better.
It's a right? brand you respect.
Right. But it is a brand I respect, and I haven't gotten over it. And here's the other thing. Here's why I've never gotten over it. If I watch a film that has been at Cannes or won an award there,
mm-hmm.
usually, I like that movie.
They've got a pretty good track record.
They do have a pretty good track record. All of that to say this. Film Movement Plus.
Yes.
As a recent winner of the Un Certain Regard prize at Cannes. It's called Donbass.
Yes.
It's new to me. I haven't watched it yet.
I have not either.
And I will probably watch it, like, maybe not on Thanksgiving Day, but after. Because on Thanksgiving Day...
You're cooking.
Well, I'm cooking, and then I have to watch Desk Set, because that's what? Just life.
Yes.
Here's what it's about. In the Donbass, a region of eastern Ukraine, a hybrid war is taking place involving an open armed conflict alongside killings and robberies on a mass scale perpetrated by separatist gangs. In the Donbass, war is called peace, propaganda.
New England.
This episode of Hillbilly Elegy is brought to you by Film Movement Plus. Propaganda is uttered as truth and hatred is declared to be love. Life suffused with fear and suspicion. What is real news and what is fake? Donbass ultimately is not a tale of one region, one country, or one political system. It's about a world lost in post-truth and fake identities. In other words...
2020!
It's about now. And... I know that sounds like a bummer. Like, I'm reading this copy and I can hear the people listening going... But here's the thing. Cinema, y'all,
yeah,
takes these difficult moments that we live in and helps you maybe make sense of them in a way. And I'm going to watch this and I'll report back. But one of the reasons I love Film Movement so much.
Film Movement Plus.
Sorry, Film Movement Plus. One of the reasons I love Film Movement Plus so much is because... they get this stuff.
Yeah.
And they bring it to you. And you know you need it. You know you want it. You wouldn't be listening to this show if you weren't. They've also got a film with a title that I'm going to destroy, Un Traductor.
Yeah.
All right. Based on a true story, in the wake of the Chernobyl nuclear disaster, Malin, played by big star Rodrigo Santoro.
Yes.
A Russian literature professor at the University of Havana is sent to translate for the Soviet children who have been brought to Cuba for medical treatment.
Mm.
While adapting to this emotionally demanding job, the Berlin Wall falls and a deep economic crisis hits the island. But Malin is so entrenched in the lives of the Chernobyl children that he fails to notice his own family suffering. Now he must find a way to put the fractured pieces of his life back together and become a better person along the way.
So, you know, if you were a fan of HBO's Chernobyl and you're like, I want more of this.
Well, and here's the thing. What's cool about the actor Rodrigo Santoro.
Yes.
Is that he chooses interesting stuff to be in. Like, I don't think he even cares about being, you know, a big star, even though he is a big star.
Yeah. No, I did a Q&A with him once for a film that I don't even think got a release in the United States. It was like a biopic of this legendary Brazilian soccer player.
Yes.
And yeah, he's so clearly like, you look at him and you're like, you're a movie star.
Right, of course.
But his choices are always really interesting. And, you know, I think he is as bemused as anyone that apparently, as he puts it, Love Actually is always on American television. But
you guys, he's the guy from Love Actually.
Yeah. You know, and you know the rabbit hole that any number of people wanted to send him down career-wise. And he's like, nope, I'm going to make this movie about the guy in Cuba translating for the Chernobyl kids in Havana.
Handsome guy number 32, we'll put you in this slot over here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell them about Full Movement Plus, how to get it.
Well.
And what their deal is.
Because, I'll tell you what their dang deal is. For listeners of Linoleum Knife, you can get a 30-day free trial and 50% off your first 3 paid months. How, you ask? By using the promo code KNIFE at checkout, KNIFE, when you make your deal over at filmmovementplus.com.
I like them.
They're great.
Do you like the theme music from this podcast?
I do, and I would love to hear it right now.
Here it is.
A podcast of the cinema.
What's your name?
I'm Alonzo Duraldi.
What's my name?
You're Dave White.
What do we do?
We are a married couple who reviews movies.
Okay, but be clear. Like, we're not just two queers sitting around the table.
I mean, we are, but not only that. I am the film reviewer.
And
reviews...
we're so fat when we sit around the table. We sit around the table.
I'm the film reviews editor for The Wrap. I'm a co-host of several other podcasts, including Breakfast All Day, Who Shot Ya, and A Film and a Movie. And, you know, it's the time of year where I like to remind people that I wrote a book called Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas that you can purchase wherever you get your books. It's a Kindle. It's a book. It's still out there. And, you know, it's a fun guide for your upcoming holiday viewing perusal.
I just like it when you give your full credentials at the beginning of the show so that people understand
that we're legit.
That we're legit, especially since I've been unemployed since March. And I still call myself a film critic on my Twitter bio. It even says film critic at The Wrap, which is like, I'm just hoping I get to come back someday.
Me too.
But, you know. Until then, this is my professional critical practice.
Welcome to your outpost.
Yeah. Okay, say it again, whether the weather is hot. We're doing a mic check, and I've never heard this before.
Whether the weather is cold or whether the weather is hot, we'll be together whatever the weather, whether we like it or not.
It's the second part that I can't wrap my face around. Mm. I tried it off the mic, and I'm not.
You'll get there.
I don't want to get there.
Okay, don't then.
I'm very bad at the theater warm-up exercises because I have never been a theater person.
Ah.
Strike that, reverse it. In ninth grade, I was.
I was going to say.
Yeah. In ninth grade, I was in The Importance of Being Earnest. I was in Where the Red Fern Grows. And I was in a community theater production of Edward Albee's Everything in the Garden. I was the precocious 14-year-old. Mm. There is a precocious 14-year-old who talks about nothing but sex and balls during the play, which is a weird movie, not movie, a weird play about suburban people murdering people and burying them in the garden.
Right up your alley.
It was, that year of my life, mm-hmm. I thought, well, I'm going to do this. Mm. It's going to be great.
Yes.
You know? And then after about a year of it, I thought, I don't want to do this anymore. This is what I think I don't want to do.
Yeah, I acted a handful of times in like high school and college and even in a community theater.
Right.
And then, yeah, it's that realization of like, not my wheelhouse. But it was fun. I mean, there were great experiences. I'm glad I did it.
They even had awards.
Oh.
The local community theater that they nominated amongst their own productions and gave out to themselves.
What were they called?
I can't remember.
The Schmookies.
Yeah. But I was nominated for Best Supporting Actor.
Well, look at you.
The youngest nominee that year.
For your consideration.
I'll tell you why I was nominated. Because I was a person who was in a play.
You showed up.
I showed up. I was on time. And they said, you get a nomination. And I was like, all the other, like the three other plays y'all did, that the other nominees are, each one gets a, yeah.
It's still an honor to be nominated.
It did not feel especially special. But I went. My mom went with me.
Mm. Was it very political award season? Did you have to hire a publicist?
I took out an ad in Roswell's edition of Variety.
Like Melissa Leo. Margaret Avery.
Yeah, Dear God. I really need this award.
If y'all don't know the story about Margaret Avery's Oscar campaign for The Color Purple.
The very best Google Oscar campaign of all time. And she should have gotten it just for that. Mm. Like, that moment is her going for it and not caring what anyone thought. And I applaud that. She wrote a letter to God in the style of The Color Purple, in the style of Alice Walker's prose in the novel The Color Purple. And she had it placed in one of the trade magazines.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
It didn't work, but the Melissa Leo ads did work.
She needs to be given, Margaret Avery needs to be given an Academy Award just for living.
For Moxie.
Yeah. Melissa Leo did the same thing, kind of.
Well, she took those glam shots.
Glammy photo shoot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, yes, you saw me as like the mom in The Fighter, but check me out. And she won.
Here's the va and the va and the voo.
Exactly. Bringing it all.
We watched some movies this week.
We did.
We watched The Sound of Metal.
Yeah, you know, and I thought, how can I get Dave White possibly interested in a movie that is set in the world of heavy metal and is about somebody who loses their hearing?
I will tell you two things about what you just said. Mm-hmm. This film is not set in the world of heavy metal.
As it turns out, it is not. That's how it's sold, though.
They're marketing it that way because the title is The Sound of Metal.
Yeah.
When in reality, the people in the film are in a band that is sort of a two-piece, noisy, metallic, almost art rock sort of.
Yeah, you said band. Experimental.
Not experimental, but definitely not what most people are thinking of when they think of metal.
Metal. Right.
I mean. The two examples of them performing in the film, not highly classified, not incredibly classifiable music.
Well, Sound of Prague didn't test well as a title. So,
in any case, the other thing you just mentioned about someone losing their hearing, that does sort of relate to me personally.
A little bit.
In that I have. Sort of a mild, not nothing compared
not like
to
the film, no.
What's going on with this guy in this movie. But I've definitely got some, you know, mid-grade tinnitus.
Yeah.
From my 80s lifestyle in the world of punk rock.
very loud bands in cinder block rooms.
Pretty much. I unintentionally harmed myself that way. In fact, this film that stars Riz Ahmed, there is a moment early on after a performance with his band where everything just drops out. The sound in the film just drops out. And everything... And in 1984, '85, after a Black Flag show, that was my hearing for a good 36 hours.
Wow.
And I was terrified. And it came back. Mm-hmm. But for the next day plus, everything sounded underwater. And I thought, oh no, I have irreparably damaged my hearing. Thanks, Black Flag. Did I learn my lesson? No. I bet I went also to see Husker Du and also to see later on a band called Unsane. Let me spit it out properly instead of biting my tongue. Unsane, Pavement were also exceptionally loud.
It's worth mentioning to the younger listeners of this program
that y'all better be wearing some earplugs when you go to shows.
In the 1980s,
yeah,
nobody was giving out earplugs at shows or recommending that you wear earplugs at shows.
Or no one ever talked about it. No. In fact, when I finally began wearing earplugs to shows in the late 80s, early 90s, people would goof on me. My friends, like, you're doing what? I was like, I have to wear these or else I'm going to be Pete Townsend one of these days.
Right.
And so, but now they all, oh, everyone I know now is like big waxy earplugs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, the film.
Yes. So Riz Ahmed is, like you said, half of a two-person combo. His partner in music and in life is played by Olivia Cooke, and they are currently on tour, living out of an RV. They are a band of some repute, like, you know, you see hung up in the trailer a couple of like zine covers that they're on, but you know they don't.
They've got more cultural capital than capital capital.
Thank you. Exactly. Yeah. Yes. And yeah, so they are performing and he suddenly loses his hearing. Like it stops. Very quickly goes away.
Yeah.
He goes to see a doctor about it. They're like, you know, you're not going to get this back. There is a possibility of doing these cochlear implants, but it's really expensive and, you know, it may not be a route you want to go. He is understandably very upset about this, and in addition to having to deal with the hearing loss, he's also a 4-year sober recovering heroin addict.
Yeah,
and so he's concerned now that the upsetting nature of this news and the trauma of losing his hearing is going to maybe send him back into using. So their manager sends him to this deaf community.
Yes.
And within that deaf community is a deaf like rehab.
Yep.
That is run by a Vietnam vet who takes him in and, you know, like explains the strict rules. You know, he has to give up his phone, he has to give up his car keys, the you know, Olivia Cooke's character has to go away. And you know, so it's about this drummer, Ruben, trying to become used to the idea of not being able to hear and learning to speak ASL, and what the guy running the rehab keeps trying to like get him to embrace is the idea of stillness.
Yeah.
Not only in terms of actual literal quiet, but of sort of being calm within himself.
Right.
And the film sort of explores his attempts and failures and successes and whatnot in the path of trying to achieve that.
Correct. This is the first film from, wait a second. I'm pulling up his name. Darius Martyr.
Yes, who and co-wrote...
with Derek Chanfrance.
Yeah. Well, he and Derek Chanfrance co-wrote The Place Beyond the Pines. Yep. Martyr and his brother, Abraham, who did the score for the film, co-wrote this one.
Yeah. Story by Derek Chanfrance.
Yeah.
Okay. In any case, one of the push and pull sort of elements of this film, one of the reasons you are kept sort of on edge throughout, and I was, is that it withholds information.
Yeah.
In at times a maddening way, but the longer I get from viewing it, the more I feel like it's an intentional withholding of information. And so, you know, there are these conversations that you wish characters were having, and they either are having them off the scene, you know, where you're not privy to hear it, or something, because as Riz Ahmed's character becomes more and more frustrated and confused, I found myself sometimes feeling that way too. And I realized after I watched it that possibly, although I can't be sure,
yeah,
that sense of disorientation, you know, that sense of almost like panic and anxiety that you feel when you're not being told everything you need to be told in order to make an appropriate decision.
Right.
Is
a feature, not a bug.
And so...
I like that theory. I don't know that I buy it entirely.
I may be completely wrong, but here's what I do know.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about my sense of tension watching the film. It's about this character moving through that, his own tension.
Right.
His own internal struggle. And it's not about someone who even is sort of like struggling with hearing loss. He's struggling with so many things at once. And so what you have then at the center of this film is a performance by Riz Ahmed that is absolutely magnetic.
Yes.
And you want to keep watching what's going on with him and how he's going to figure out his next step.
Right.
I don't want to spoil the ending because I love the ending so much.
Yes.
And it doesn't do all the things that you're hoping it doesn't do.
That's a very good way to put it. That's a terrific ending.
It's really, he's great.
Yeah.
The subject matter is something that I've not encountered before in a film. And another thing I love about it, and then I promise I'll let you have a word in edgewise. The sound design and captioning and what gets captioned and what doesn't get captioned,
yes.
All of it, great.
Yeah.
All right, say your...
I just wanted to mention Paul Racy, who plays the guy who runs the rehab, mainly a stage actor and musician, hasn't done a lot of film or television, but you can tell he brings a lifetime of experience to this role. Apparently,
and that from childhood
he was raised by deaf parents,
child of adult parents, yeah.
And so,
child of adult parents, did I just say
you
that?
Did say
child
that.
Of deaf parents, yes.
And so, so he's extraordinary as well. But yeah, Riz Ahmed, who I've really admired his work for, I mean, going all the way back to Four Lions, I just think he's such a fascinating actor. This is a really great piece for him. I have questions about the script, and I like your idea that that's what they're going for, and I don't know if I can entirely... I think I can still poke holes in it if I feel like that. So I don't... You are, however, correct that the sound design is extraordinary, and it is very subjective in terms of being very specific about what Riz Ahmed is able to hear or not hear at any given moment and how he's hearing it. Every so often, they'll cut to an angle where it's like, here's what's actually happening.
Right.
And then, but for the most part, it is very much point of hearing, I guess, like point of view.
Yeah.
for Ahmed's character. And when I wrote about this, and I mentioned film precedence in Hollywood movies.
Yes.
You did not know about Sincerely Yours.
I knew it existed. I know that film is a real film.
Yeah.
And I know that I don't remember watching it with you, even though you claimed that
I thought we watched it on TCM once.
Like, I'm sure, you know what? I'm sure we did. I'm sure like some Saturday afternoon when we were just lying around doing nothing that we did watch it. But I don't really have a memory of it. And I think I would remember this film.
You'd think you would.
Yeah.
Because it was it was a star vehicle for Liberace.
In the late 50s?
Yeah, like 56, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, when Liberace was hot, hot, hot on television, like hugely popular.
Yeah.
They thought, well, we got to get this guy into the pictures.
Yes.
So Warner Brothers remade an old George Arliss vehicle, whose name I can't remember the title of the original movie. But basically, Liberace plays a very talented and successful piano player, not unlike Liberace,
yes,
who loses his hearing and, you know, is at first embittered and thinks that his career is over. But then he, like, you know, starts interfering in other people's lives and doing good deeds and that kind of thing.
Okay.
But the movie has these segments where the soundtrack suddenly gets all like, like you hear what his character hears as his hearing diminishes. This movie is doing so in a much more sophisticated way, obviously. they have access to
the
greater...
The fact that you even brought it up in your review, just... I find endlessly amusing.
Well,
and
because
and I know you did it for a very real reason... But it's such a goofy.
It's a thing that hasn't happened a lot in movies.
Yeah,
and I didn't want it to be the kind of thing where people think, "Oh, they've invented this thing."
Right.
Do you
think these guys though? Do you think they watched?
I very much doubt that they went to Sincerely Yours for research. I'm just saying
they might have.
When I worked at the Advocate, as an editor, we were always told, and it was always true.
Yeah.
Never call something the first anything.
Right.
Because there's always some like obscure thing where it happened once. You know, whenever we would talk about like the first, you know, couple to be legally married, it turns out in the early 70s, there were these two guys who somehow managed to get some state to like give them a marriage license, even though it was immediately rescinded or something.
Oh, wow.
But anyway, like history is littered with actual firsts that nobody remembers.
Right.
And then when the thing comes around later, you never call it the first because someone's always going to correct you.
You know, we're a great place to say this is the first time that this has ever happened. You know where a great place to do that is?
Where would be that?
Twitter.
Yes, because no one ever wants to correct you on Twitter.
I can't go a day on Twitter without someone saying something completely, absolutely, so factually incorrect. And then other people running with it like, yeah, and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, everyone's wrong.
No, no.
You're wrong right now.
No.
And I never... No. Correct anyone. I just let him go. And it's just such a freeing moment in each day of my life. I don't correct anyone. Because the minute you correct someone, that's the end of your day.
I think there's a way to do it.
Nope. Not interested.
I
have a lot of... Listen, I've got a vacuum. I got dinner to make. I can't be. I cannot be hanging out on Twitter.com.
I think there is a way to be like, hey, I think you mean da da da, as opposed to like,
no,
well,
thank you.
Actually,
nope, not happening. Never happening. Alonzo,
Dave,
I need to know about Ovid.
Oh, you do need to.
I need to know about Ovid this week.
So much happening over there, as always. A couple of very cool things that I want to spotlight amongst the mass of extraordinary programming that they offer. A very cool anthology film called Six in Paris,
mm-hmm.
That reflects the work of six of the most of the major filmmakers of the French New Wave.
Yeah,
Claude Chabrol, Jean Duché, Jean-Luc Godard, Jean-Daniel Paulet, Eric Rohmer and Jean Rouch. In 1965, young producer Barbe Schroeder, who would later pop up in the cast of Celine and Julie Go Boating and then direct films like Barfly.
He was connected to Rohmer quite a bit.
Yes, yeah. He produced quite a few of his films.
Yeah.
Young Barbe Schroeder supplied a 16mm camera, color film stock, and color film stock to six friends and asked each of them to make a short film about a particular Parisian neighborhood or
arrondissement.
Yeah. These were shot quickly, live sound, low budget, often improvised, and this film collects all six of them together. Also streaming right now on Ovid, one of my favorite films of recent years, Patrick Wang's two-part A Bread Factory, which is a delight.
It is.
It's some of the best 4 hours you'll ever spend.
Yep.
Tyne Daly.
I did not speak to Tyne Daly that day in the post office.
Mm.
Although in my head, what I wanted to say was, A Bread Factory is so cool.
It is so cool.
And, but I just, my rule, you know,
don't talk to
the famous people. Unless they speak to you first.
Well, of course.
If they talk to you first and they're like, hey, I have this movie called A Bread Factory. I know you're standing behind me in line at the post office, but have you seen my film, A Bread Factory?
It's currently streaming on Ovid.tv.
Then I could have said, yes, Tyne Daly, and it's cool.
Also over at Ovid, this, I know you're excited about this.
Oh, I already know what you're going to say.
Lav Diaz is From What Is Before. Yeah. I know you love a Lav Diaz.
I love Lav Diaz.
Five and a half hours.
I haven't seen this one.
Woo.
But I dig his movie Norte, End of History, and
The Woman Who Left.
The Woman Who Left is so extraordinary. I don't know if those are on Ovid right now.
No, I don't know, but it doesn't matter. It got From What Is Before.
Don't matter. What matters is this one. Is on Ovid right now.
They got some Lav Diaz.
Now, that's a Thanksgiving Day watch right there.
Oh, for sure.
The day after.
Yes.
I'll be roasting a turkey.
So, yeah, Ovid, they've got such an amazing mix of foreign films and U.S. indies and documentaries and shorts, features, you name it. The really good stuff, the deep cuts, You're the cognoscenti. You want to know about this stuff, and you will.
Cognoscenti or cognoscenti?
Oh wow, that's in that category of words I've only read.
Words you've read and seen in print, but you don't actually have occasion to speak them.
Maybe it is the cognoscenti.
Doesn't matter.
Had not thought about that.
Sir, it does not matter.
Anyway.
Someone listening is yelling at the.
Of course they are.
The speakers right now. It's pronounced.
Yeah. You idiots.
Yeah. All right.
Anyway, y'all are cool. You love great movies. You want Ovid.tv in your life, and you can get it for 50% off the first 3 months of your subscription. Just use the code Linoleum, Linoleum, when you check out at Ovid.tv. That's OV as in Victor, ID as in David, .tv.
Did we mention that Matthew Amalric is in Sound of Metal?
We did not.
He just shows up near the end.
Yes, but you know what?
Speaking English.
If a movie is going to go to France,
he speaks English in other films.
You
too,
want Matthew Amalric there waiting for you on the tarmac at Orly.
You expect him to, you know, start speaking French.
He was in Quantum of Solace.
I know.
It's the Quantum of Solace.
All right. Croods 2.
The Croods. Colon, A New Age.
Yes.
So, I went back and reread my review of The Croods from 2013. And
because you had forgotten that it had existed.
I kind of had forgotten it existed. I quite liked The Croods when it came out.
Yeah.
I thought it was very funny.
2016
I thought it was
or 2013?
2013.
Really, that long
ago?
Yeah,
that long ago.
All right.
I thought it was visually, had some very interesting ideas where you had these kind of very cartoony, like, human characters, and then these outrageous, like, fictional, you know, monstrous beasts, but then a very kind of photorealistic background of shifting Pangaea.
Right.
And then I forgot about The Croods. You know, there was a Netflix series in 2015 that I never watched, and then suddenly, a Croods sequel. Okay.
Oh, so that's what took them so long. They were doing an animated...
Yeah, but almost all the DreamWorks, I think maybe every DreamWorks feature at some point or other spawns a series on Netflix. Like there's a Home series, maybe not Mr. Peabody and Sherman, maybe even Mr. Peabody and Sherman, I don't know. Anyway.
I don't know things.
So, The Croods. No one asked for the sequel, and we're getting it anyway. And it's quite lovely. It's very funny. It's very funny.
It's pretty funny.
I laughed quite a bit.
I don't care about The Croods. And yet, this is really funny. And there's a lot of visual humor.
Yes.
It's not just that there's some, funny one-liners. There's a lot of visual humor, a lot of really wonderfully designed characters that have great expressive, faces.
Yes.
Or bodies, really.
And there's there's a funny running joke in the two films where, all the creatures that they encounter are hybrids of two different kinds of animals. So they're like wolf spiders,
Yeah.
And one thing I do admire for both these films is that, and it's the thing I talk about in live action comedies, I love a structure. I love setup, payoff. I love a joke that seems random and then they call back to it later and it's hysterically funny. The premise this time is that if you saw the first movie, it's basically about a cave person family encountering a slightly more evolved guy named Guy who has fire and who falls in love with the teenage daughter of the cave clan and the father's constant concern that she's going to leave and that the clan is going to break up. And instead, what happens is they incorporate Guy into the clan of the Croods. The dad is Nicolas Cage. The mom is Catherine Keener. The daughter is
Emma Stone.
The son is Clark Duke. The grandmother is Cloris Leachman. So this time around, Emma Stone and Ryan Reynolds' character is very much in love to the point where they're annoying the heck out of everybody else.
People in love are
irritating.
Annoying.
And when the two of them start talking about maybe going off alone together to start, their own family or whatever, Nicolas Cage is freaking out about it. So he's trying to find this paradise that they're all looking for. And he does. He finds this lush, overgrown fruit everywhere, kind of paradise. And it turns out it is a walled city created by a couple that were friends of Guy's parents. They are the Bettermans, voiced by Peter Dinklage and Leslie Mann. Their daughter is Kelly Maria Tran.
Yes.
The two of them are kind of put off by the Croods' crudeness, but they want Guy and their daughter to get together, so they are sort of trying to manipulate them into, basically leaving Guy behind and then going away. One of the things I really like is that at no point are Kelly Marie Tran and Emma Stone's character fighting over a boy. Their whole thing is oh my God, another teenage girl, finally, let's be best friends.
Yeah.
So that's fun. And the women do actually wind up playing a very key role in the plot as far as really having to rescue the men by the end of things.
It gets pretty Mad Max Fury Road.
I was totally thinking about that. The end, yes. Yeah. So yeah, this is again, it's in theaters and don't go to theaters, but it will be streaming
Do not go to theaters.
But it'll be streaming very soon because AMC has this whole new deal with Universal with a very slim theatrical window before it goes to streaming. It'll be streaming before Christmas. And am I stretching it and thinking there's a bit of a political message here where you have man bun compost heap guy on one hand and a literal Neanderthal on the other, and they're both wrong and need to shut up and listen to the women and younger people?
That's pretty much that's the grown-up story of this film.
Yeah.
The children's story of this film is it looks like a gumball machine gone berserk.
Yeah, whatever the photorealistic landscape of the first movie has been completely abandoned, and that's fine.
As I watched it, I thought, not since the Wachowskis' Speed Racer have I seen something such Like, was it you that talked about, or was it you or Christy that talked about how Speed Racer felt like someone was
pouring melted Skittles into your eyeballs?
Pouring melted Skittles into your eyeballs.
That was me.
That was you. Yeah. Well, that's this movie too. It is. It's almost an assault, but it's fun.
Yeah,
to look at.
It knows what
you
want to
keep looking at it. It's wild.
Yeah.
And so, you know, your children will enjoy it. You might also.
I think we tend to, you know, like again in the way that I forgot that this the Croods existed. I feel like I'm always soft peddling DreamWorks Animation, and I think they're better than I think of them as being. You know, I think early on it was all stuff like Spirit, Stallion of the Cimarron, and Shark Tale, and you know, Prince of Egypt that I wasn't super excited about. But well, like, you know, the How to Train Your Dragon franchise, solid. Kung Fu Panda franchise,
fun.
Solid.
Yep.
I really like Mr. Peabody and Sherman.
Mr. Peabody and Sherman was a good movie.
Yeah. So, like, I think there's a lot going on there that I think, you know, are really entertaining. I just, oh, well, you know, the Shrek movies were kind of whatever.
Well, they did. Which was it, Shrek 2 or 3, where they kind of pulled it out and it was not hideous?
I forget.
One of the sequels turned out not to be bad.
2 or 3, yeah, right. Yeah. It was, yeah. But generally speaking,
but no, boy, did I hate that first one.
Ugh, me too. And everybody loved that movie. But
right.
it has. I'm happy that apparently it hasn't held up. Like, I haven't gone back to rewatch it, but I think We Hate Movies or somebody went back and looked at it and were like, woo. So, you know.
I mean, minus the green, I do resemble Shrek. But
well, and human Shrek is adorable. Remember?
I'm also adorable.
You are.
Yeah.
But when Shrek turns human, I was like, okay. Okay, Shrek. Shrek, okay.
So you're saying human Shrek can get it.
I am exactly.
And then consequently, that means I can get it.
You can.
Okay.
I want you to know, after 25 years of marriage, Dave White.
Thank you. That makes me happy.
Good.
Yeah. Check it out. I saw a staggeringly great film from 1981.
Okay.
It's from Portuguese director Manuel de Oliveira.
Mm-hmm. Is he still alive?
Boy, do I not have a good time or an easy time pronouncing his last name. It's always I'm not used to Portuguese.
Yeah.
And it's hard to say. Anyway.
It's very vowel-y.
No, he's not alive anymore.
He was alive forever.
Do y'all know who Manuel de Oliveira was? I'm going to tell you who he was before I tell you about this film. Portuguese filmmaker, born in 1908. Okay?
Yeah.
Died in 2015.
And when did he stop making movies?
When he died, he was 107 years old.
Yeah.
He stopped making movies when he was roughly 105. That is not a joke.
No.
That really is what happened in his life. In 1942, he made his first narrative feature. Although he had made documentaries even before then.
Mm.
The narrative feature was called Aniki Bobo, and it was more or less rejected by critics and the public at the time. That's my understanding. But then in 1954, the Film Club of Porto screened it. And sort of the appreciation of him began. And he had sort of withdrawn a little bit. Like, he was sort of like, I guess I'm not going to make movies. You know, I'm going to just do stuff with my family. He was born rich.
Ah.
So, but he became important to the Cinema Novo movement in Brazil in the 60s.
Mm.
And a great number of his films were made after he turned 65. He spent 40 more years after the age of 65 making his best films.
Yes.
He did not stop, again, like I said, until he was about 105. The moral here is, keep on moving. Don't stop. No. Right? All right. So this film is from 1981.
Okay.
It's got a 4K restoration.
When he was a spring chicken of 73.
That is correct. 4K restoration of a 1981 film called Francisca. Mm-hmm. And it, my understanding is that this is its first American release.
Oh, okay.
It's been 40 years.
That scans.
Yeah. And this film is strange. Mm. It's an adaptation of a novel called Fanny Owen, mm-hmm. By a writer named Agustina Bessa Luis. It's based on true events. Here's where it gets wild. Okay. It's based on true events and, in fact, are part of the family history of De Oliveira's wife.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So events from his wife's ancestors formed the basis of this novel, which includes real-life characters and then fictionalized versions of other people.
Okay.
Is all this making sense?
Sure.
All right.
I'm with you.
It's set in 1850 in Portugal. It's a love triangle. But the... Is it right to call someone the protagonist if they don't show up in the film for the first, like, 45 minutes?
It's not unprecedented.
Technically, yeah. Okay. Well, so the alleged protagonist, Francisca herself...
Do they talk about her a lot?
They do. They talk about her some. They mostly talk to themselves about themselves and their own... ideas.
Boy.
Anyway, she shows up a good chunk of the way through the movie. Mm-hmm. Everyone calls her Fanny. She doesn't appear for quite some time. The first part of the film, though, consists of her rival suitors being... They're blowhards.
Mm.
Yeah. They sit around talking about life and philosophy and literature and history and politics and romance and anything that crosses their head. One is this sort of Byronic fop,
mm-hmm.
and the other is a snotty writer slash critic. He says more than once in the movie, "Don't bother me. I have a review to write." I'm like, where have I heard that?
Mm.
So anyway, they sit for long stretches in rooms just spouting aphorisms, and eventually Fanny shows up. And let's be honest, she's not setting anybody's world on fire either. So the three of them actually kind of all deserve each other. At one point, but she doesn't talk so much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she is a woman of her moment where she was expected to sit quietly and let the men speak.
Right. You know? Demure.
Yeah. At one point, she actually mentions that... yawning is one of her primary emotional states. She says this. So this love triangle, as you might imagine, ends in a bad way. So it's a period melodrama, but only in that it has a melodramatic premise, mm-hmm. and that it's set in 1850 and the costumes and the sets are right. There is a defiant juxtaposition of, you know, themes of passion. You know, the people talk about how they are passionately in love. But you would never know it to look at their faces. So these themes of passion are just housed in a this suffocating framework of passionless action. The dialogue is deadpan, like it's a Strobouillet or a Bresson film. Odd body positions of actors who either look into the corner of a room like a cat staring at nothing while they're speaking this dialogue, or
is the Blair Witch
or
there?
Yeah, or they are staring directly into the camera. Even after they finish talking, like someone else is talking and the other person is still staring directly into the camera. And you're like, why are you doing that? Freaking me out. Yeah. Okay. So they do all this in these interiors that are very dark and enclosed. But of course, they're just impeccably lit up with candles and sometimes indirect natural light, or even like in this one ballroom scene, which is deep saturated color with like confetti flying everywhere. But no matter where the people are, they are boxed in and trapped in their moment. They're also surprising and not infrequent odd comedic touches, lines of dialogue, weird things that people say to each other, repeated bits of dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
Like you'll see someone talking to someone else, and then the camera will shift to an entirely different angle, and they will repeat the scene again from a different perspective, a different physical perspective.
Right.
Again, the comedic stuff, someone like rides a, one of the guys rides a horse into a room twice.
Okay.
Which is meant to be, you know, this shocking intrusion into this, you know, this hermetically sealed little aristocratic mausoleum, basically. And it reminded me, and I can't help but wonder if this was intentional now that I've gone and seen the film that came before it. A pigeon sat on a branch reflecting on
existence.
A pigeon sat on a branch reflecting on existence.
I need to see that one.
The Roy Anderson film from 2014. People ride horses into rooms in that film too, and I thought, oh,
is he doing a shout out?
Is that a shout out? Is that like a? Is that the punchline? Is that like we've waited 35 years and now here I'm going to do it and I'm going to like pick up the? I don't know, but it feels like it could be that.
Gotcha.
Because a pigeon sat on a branch reflecting on existence is a similarly sort of diorama-like production where
right.
people are in rooms just saying things and then weird stuff happens, you know? So this is a story that you think you know the rules of. You know, it's an aristocratic setting and there are doomed lovers and there's an outcome that is usually heightened by emotions in other versions of something like this. But here, the doomed people are just doomed by their own inaction and sort of vice-like existence. And it's one they choose to participate in. So like in something else, it'd be, you know, the bodice loosening.
Right.
but here it never happens. Their emotions never come into play. The atmosphere becomes heightened by this really tightly controlled tightly composed, sort of meticulously modern filmmaking practice. It's like people in 1850 forced into a time machine against their will, and they're all bewildered by what just happened to them. I love it.
Okay.
It's I'm not gonna lie, it's work.
Mm.
Good work that you will enjoy doing.
Is it in virtual cinemas right now?
It is currently in virtual cinemas.
Okay.
It's great.
All right. I too saw a great film this week from this year.
I did not see this.
Yeah.
It's called Collective.
Collective.
It's a Romanian documentary.
Yes.
And when I say, oh, it's because, as usual, I'm doing housework or whatever or something else, walking through the living room from time to time, and pausing to watch the screen for a few moments and just feeling the dread and the tension and the thriller-like qualities of this film.
Yeah, this is...
Talk about it.
Oh, man. Okay, so in Romania, there was a fire in a nightclub called Collective, and because they didn't have... The government had not... Basically, because of crappy regulation, they didn't have enough fire exits, and so all these people died. It was a national scandal, and a lot more people, you know, there were survivors, but who were burned terribly. So the Social Democratic government, which despite its name apparently is very right wing, steps down for a year for these what they call the technocrats to kind of come in and run the government for a year to try and make improvements and that sort of thing. So The other problem, besides there not being enough exits, is that the hospitals were telling everybody, we're not allowing people to take their, like, if your child was in a, was one of the survivors and you wanted to move them to a hospital in another country in the EU that maybe had more sophisticated, you know, post-burn trauma things, they wouldn't let them. They would say, no, 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 it's fine. They're getting, you know, treatment here just as good as Germany.
Oh.
But then it turns out that all these people who survived the fire died of infection in the hospitals. God. Because as and then it turns out that it, then a sports paper does the investigative footwork to find out right. that the disinfectants that the hospitals are using are like way more diluted than the label says.
Oh my.
And then every time basically they find out one terrible thing, it's this onion. And it keeps going, and it turns out that, like, all the hospital managers are, like, crooks and politically aligned and a lot of times, like, you know, like, part of organized crime stuff. And then when the, you know, the first minister of health who tried to defend the whole disinfectant thing steps down, a new one comes in, and the new one seems better because, for one thing, he allows the filmmaking team access to him. So he seems to be clearly, like, you know, all about transparency and stuff. But then when he starts pushing hard against the hospital managers and saying they can't be affiliated with political parties, then suddenly the Social Democrats start raising a ruckus about, hey, how come we don't have lung transplants here? Why are you sending people out of the country for that?
Right.
And it's like they just change the subject in the media with the assistance of, you know, partisan media outlets.
Right.
It's infuriating on right. multiple levels, especially when you think, like, that's what's happening here. Yeah. Maybe not to quite to the same levels of, like, corruption and, you know, malfeasance.
It's the same levels.
But we're having our own version of that.
The United States is a nightmare right now. So,
And so this filmmaker, Alexander Nanau, like, on the one hand, is very kind of Frederick Wiseman in terms of there's no interviews.
Right.
There's no on-screen chyrons to, like, identify people.
Right.
There's no music. But he edits like it's a thriller.
Right.
And so it's, you're just like, I got so tense watching this movie.
Right.
Because you want to fix it and no one can fix it because it just gets the rabbit hole just gets deeper and deeper and deeper there, you know. And then there's a woman who's one of the survivors who's participating in this art exhibition with a photographer where he's basically like photographing, like, she's missing a lot of fingers and she right. has a scar on the top of her head where, like, hair will never grow again and, you know, burn marks on her body and stuff. And she's being photographed to reveal all this stuff as kind of a way to, and eventually, like, the Minister of Health puts one of those pictures in his office, like, as this reminder to him of, like, this is a real thing with real consequences that affects people. And he's trying so hard to get this stuff done. And the people from the sports paper are trying so hard to, like, get the word out and to investigate this thing and figure out what's going on. But it's like the system is so broken that yeah. they just cannot get to the bottom of things. And it's one of the most exasperating and fascinating documentaries I have ever seen.
So it's as if The Death of Mr. Lazarescu was a documentary.
Yes, okay. Exactly. All good right. comparison.
Much like that, you know, the Ukrainian film that I talked about at the beginning, you know, you hear
oh,
a
yes.
you hear these story, you hear this, you hear the plots of these films, you're like, no, yeah. but then you really.
Then this is an exciting movie.
Then you see him and you're like, no, I'm really glad I watched that.
Yeah, this is exciting filmmaking about an infuriating subject.
That's why I hate telling people what movies are about. I just say, here it is, go.
Go see it. We'll talk about it afterwards.
Yeah.
like this and Totally Under Control both made me insane.
Yeah, Totally Under Control is really, really, really upsetting.
Yeah, but they're both really well made and really, like, people should be, you should see this movie. You should be having conversations about this movie. This is the kind of movie that you want to make a change in the world as an expose of how awful things are.
I've got the theme song from the sitcom Sanford and Son in my head.
Because
I'm thinking Amber Petty. Amber Petty bought an ad.
Amber Petty.
And here
and
it
she
is.
Wants to show you how to write.
Do you want to be a freelance writer? That God, oh, that God bless you.
If you haven't got a halfpenny.
You won't after you become a freelance writer either. But then you thought, no. I don't even know where to start to become a freelance writer. Also, maybe I'm terrible. Well, that means you might just need a coach.
Maybe you do.
To get yourself started. Amber Petty works with actors, writers, and creative people to help them find a side job that they do not hate and start writing for money. I goof at the beginning, but you know what? I mean, you and I, we've been freelance writers for 20 years, and
sure,
we haven't, you know, been evicted yet. So,
knock wood.
Will it bring you riches? Probably not. But freelance writing is a whole lot better than being screamed at by brunch goers for not bringing out their bread fast enough. That's true.
Indeed.
Amber helps you figure out your strengths, make a plan. Strengths.
Whether the weather is cold.
She helps you figure those out, how to make a plan to get started, stop thinking about maybe writing someday and start doing it now. Writing pays. It can.
Yeah.
She is offering you a free 30-minute coaching session.
What?
Yeah. Free.
Just giving it away to Linoleum Nights.
Listen, the first one's always free.
Oh, yeah. That's how they get you.
That's how Amber Petty gets you.
Let her get you.
Sign up at Amber Petty, AmberPetty, like Tom Petty.
Mm-hmm.
AmberPetty.com/linoleum. No code required.
All right.
Free 30-minute coaching session.
What have you got to lose?
And then she also has like this workshops that she does sometimes.
Yeah, a lot of different training opportunities.
That's when you pay.
Oh, yeah.
Go do it. Hey.
We have letters.
We do have letters. Here's one that that got sent to us on October 27th, and we're just now getting around to it.
We've had some backlog.
It's about Borat. It's from Mike.
Yes.
I just listened to you guys review Borat, and I read Alonzo's review with the rap, and I think you missed a fundamental problem.
I probably did.
The fundamental conceit of Borat is racist and xenophobic.
Hmm.
The movies are racist, and Sacha Baron Cohen doesn't care. He's punching down onto a country and people that he doesn't understand, he doesn't know, and doesn't care about. They are just a convenient prop to poke fun at terrible Western white people. Ha ha, the monkey's a porn star. What? That's hilarious. Look how backward they are. That's funny. He's giving his daughter away to right-wing Americans, another side splitter, and she eats the monkey. Oh my God, genius. The politics and history of former Soviet republics, which is the subject of my own degree. The subject of my own degree in history was Russia and the USSR. That subject is complex and often ugly. But artists shouldn't just use a place they don't understand as a shorthand for backward societies and ignorance. It's the reason Rudyard Kipling's poems, and Uncle Remus stories are looked on as racist period pieces now. All Cohen had to do was make up a place and run with it, and he could have accomplished the same task without insulting real people and a real culture. But he chose a real place, and that has consequences. If that real place had been somewhere in Africa or South America or was made by a non-Jewish person using Jewish people as stereotypes, he would have been roundly criticized for poking racist-funded people that he didn't understand. But somehow, because that place is a Central Asian -Stan country, it's okay. I don't buy it. Your own dear friend, Ingu Kang, wrote an excellent piece several years ago, which I found while thinking about this and writing some about it online, for Slate, and then he includes the link, with the headline, Borat Exposed American Prejudice, But It Indulged Our Xenophobia. I couldn't have said it better myself. Thanks, Mike in New Orleans. Mike in New Orleans, I had never considered this.
Yeah. We appreciate it.
I hadn't thought about it.
We grew up in an era when people still published books of Polish jokes.
That is correct. Oh, my father loved them.
Yeah.
Yeah, my father bought those books. Those little bathroom books of mm-hmm. Polish jokes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have to think about this now. Because I think you're right.
Kazakhstan is a real place.
I don't have anything else to say other than I have never thought about this before, and now I have to go think about it because I think you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Before we get to our final letter, just wanted to remind everybody that we have a Patreon page at patreon.com/linoleumknife. Lots of extra content.
We other podcasts. Would you like me to tell you what they are?
Please do.
Here they are. Linoleum Knife presents more Linoleum Knife.
Mm-hmm.
LKTV. That's a TV podcast. Linoleum Knife presents more Linoleum Knife is the one where we take an old movie and we talk about it for like 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Something that we've just recently watched together.
Yes.
The most recent one is the bizarre 1956 remake of 1939's The Women. This film is called The Opposite Sex, and it's very strange. Quite. We talk about that.
We do.
In what we think is an entertaining way.
Mm.
Who knows? Maybe you'll think that too. I don't know. We do LKTV, which is about TV. Linoleum Knife and Fork, which is about food. Because we talk so much about food on this show, people were like, why don't you just do a whole podcast about food? We said, we're not qualified to do that. And they said, do it anyway. And so somehow we fill an hour. Linoleum Nights, which is where we talk about anything we feel like talking about. Politics, religion.
Culture.
Culture. Music, I forget what else, things.
And we, with swears.
Oh, yeah, that's the one that's not clean. That's the one where we say the F word.
Yeah.
Because we said, listen, if you could count the number of times that, the profanity that flies through this home.
Yes.
Anyway, patreon.com/linoleumknife.
Please check it out.
Find it. Here's another letter.
Yes.
B. Hello, B.
Hello, B.
All right, screw it. I'm doing the Linoleum Knife List Challenge thing. The list changes day to day, but today these are the 10 cinematic works I put forth as representing cinema's possibilities for me. Okay, so there's a title of a movie, and then a one-word...
aspect.
Aspect of the film that... is important to be.
Yes.
Moonlight.
Ooh.
And the word is beauty.
Yeah.
You Were Never Really Here. And the word is catharsis.
Mm.
My Neighbor Totoro.
Ah.
Awe. A-W-E.
Mm.
Not awe.
No.
the sun, the before.
Whether the before. Weather is cold.
Before sunrise, before sunset, before midnight, the trilogy.
Yes.
Longing.
Mm.
Is it nostalgia or nostalgia?
I think in the case of Tarkovsky, it's I've heard nostalgia even. I don't
All
know.
Right. Loneliness.
Mm.
Accurate. Y Tu Mamá También. Liberation.
Mm.
Patterson. Contentment. Certain Women. Honesty. 12 Angry Men. Integrity. Cleo from 5 to 7. Agency. I like these little one word.
Yeah.
What it means to me in one word situation. That's nice. I like that. Okay. Now, I'm down for all these movies. Maybe not as much on You Were Never Really Here.
That was mine too.
But
I was like,
it's because I felt so wrung out by the end of it that I guess maybe I have to go back and look at it again someday.
I thought that movie was kind of up its own keister.
I think we need to give it to you anyway.
All right, fine.
You're 100% knife. B.
B. Enjoy. Thank you for listening.
Maybe 95.
Yeah.
If we took off as like if we didn't
we would shave off a
if
little
we for... if we shaved off a little of You Were Never Really Here. I don't know.
Yeah. But we're feeling generous today.
I'm very hungry right now. And I've got a lot of leftovers sitting on the counter waiting to go on the stove and in the oven simultaneously.
Oh,
this is fridge clearing week.
Okay.
Because
Thanksgiving's coming up.
Well, yeah. You know, I got it. We get a thing, you know, yeah. Stuff's happening.
For sure.
So it's leftovers for Monday night dinner.
I want to give a real quick plug. I am on the Hallmarkies podcast this week, talking about a Nashville Christmas Carol and the Lifetime movie Feliz Navidad.
Oh,
and I will be on Deck the Hallmark later this week talking about the Christmas house. So check those out, please.
The Christmas puke.
And also give a listen to our friend's show.
The Christmas Turd.
Stop it.
No. tell Hallmark to stop it. How about that?
Go listen to Bibbs and Whitney and what they're up to over at the Critically Acclaimed Network. Listen to Schmoes Know, Dennis, anyone with Dennis Hensley.
The Christmas Scab.
The Comics Canon, Sewers of Paris, All Things Cozy, Fat Guys of the Movies, The Big Fat Gay Podcast, the Criterion Cast, and Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to this show for free at Apple Podcasts. Leave us a 5-star review. We'll
Did
read
you talk about
show.
The workroom?
Oh, in the workroom.
That
yes, of course.
Often features
The wonderful Nayland Blake.
The glorious
yes.
Nayland Blake.
Subscribe to this show at Apple Podcasts. Leave us a 5-star review. You can also leave us positive feedback in the many places that we stream. Spotify, Google Play, Amazon Music, Stitcher Radio, TheLounge.com, CastBox, Podbean. Follow us at LinoleumCast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Thank you, Blue, for our theme music. Follow him on Twitter at Bluetopia, BLEUTOPIA. And drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com with comments or questions. Everybody, have a great Thanksgiving. Stay safe. Stay at home. Wear a mask. Wash your hands.
Stay away from me.
Yes.
Especially if you are a Hallmark Christmas movie.
Behave.
Oh, I'm behaving.
Uh-huh. You're bouncing if you don't watch it.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you all for listening. We'll catch you guys next time. Until then,
goodbye.